Welcome to the Plain Label Podcast, Pod Shots.
Bloody flies. Here one dozen more turn up to his funeral. Oh, Danny boy, the flies are crawling. Oh, a thousand pardons, my dear man. It appears that I am a little scuppered. No need for that, sir. We are white men, you and I. Permit me to introduce myself. My name is Jelon Lamb, citizen of the world, you might say, an adventurer. And if I may be so bold, a man of no little education. And you, sir, by what name am I honored to address thee? Of course, sir. Mere detail. Mere detail. Forgive me, sir, but I've been stuck here with no one but this sorry sack of Hibernian pigshit for conversation. Poor Dan O'Reilly. Sit, sir. Drink with me.
One more crack about the Irish, Mr. Lamb, and I'll shoot you. Am I clear?
Oh, the waters of Ennis, sir. Let us drink then to the Irish. No finer race of men hath ever peeled a potato.
Do you pray, Mr. Lamb?
Good Lord, sir, no, I do not. I was in days gone by a believer. But, alas, I came to this beleaguered land and the god in me just evaporated.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Podshots. I'm your host, Eric Williams. For this episode, we are discussing the 2005 film, The Proposition, written and composed by Nick Cave. The film was directed by John Hillcoat and stars Guy Pearce, Ray Winston, Danny Houston, John Hurt, David Wenham, and Emily Watson. Here to discuss the film with me is returning guest, my Fumblerooski co-host and good friend, Mr. Travis Seabrass.
Howdy, Conan.
Before getting into our discussion, I would like to mention that this podcast is brought to you by the Deliberate Noise Network. Head over to deliberatenoise.com and check out some of the other shows that are over there. So, Mr. Seabrass, what are you drinking for me this evening?
I have a little Alpha Claws from Three Floyds Beer. I can't talk. Brewery in Indiana.
Interesting. I figured this is kind of a tough guy's movie, right? Living out on the land in the unsettled, you know, the unsettled West, I guess, sort of. The wilderness, the wild of Australia. So I figured I'd go with a manly drink. I'm not going with a grapefruit vodka or anything like that. I am appropriately having some Irish whiskey, some Jameson, and a little Diet Coke.
Wow.
It has been a long time since I've had some whiskey, and it is not suitable to my palate at the moment.
Maybe you should just cut out the Diet Coke and just have the JMO.
And just sip some JMO and a little ice action. Rock or one of those ice stones or whatever they are.
Yep.
I don't know if I can handle that. I don't know if I'm man enough to handle that. All right, well, let's go ahead and kick off our discussion of The Proposition.
Do I need to introduce myself? I've kept company with bad men all my life. I wish to present you with a proposition. I suppose I told you there was a way to save your little brother Mikey from the noose. Suppose I gave you a horse, a gun.
So what is it that you want?
I know where your brother Arthur Burns is. It is a godforsaken place.
You want me to kill me, brother?
I want you to kill your brother.
Word has it,
you promised those animals who raped Eliza Hopkins a pardon if Charlie Burns brought back his brother.
Arthur Burns is a monster, an abomination. It is he who is responsible for this outrage.
Your brother's come to kill you. I can help.
Help me. Is everything all right?
Perhaps you better ask your husband.
I will civilize this land.
Who do you think you are? The judge and the jury?
Arthur Burns must be stopped.
My God, man, they raped a woman.
She was my friend!
You should never have left us.
Brother.
Hang on, Mikey, come Christmas Day.
What?
I know why you've come back, child.
May the Lord make us truly thankful for what we are about to receive.
If you have to kill one, make sure you bloody will kill them all.
When set the moon to the stars in the sky, so set the wind that followed him out.
Love. Love is the key. Love and family.
And the IMDb plot synopsis is as follows. Rural Australia in the late 19th century. Captain Staley and his Stanley and his men capture two of the four Burns brothers, Charlie and Mike. Their gang is responsible for attacking the Hopkins farm, raping pregnant Mrs. Hopkins, and murdering their whole family. Arthur Burns, the eldest brother and gang's mastermind, remains on the loose and has retreated to a mountain hideout. Captain Stanley's proposition to Charlie is to gain pardon, and more importantly, save his beloved younger brother Mike from the gallows by finding and killing Arthur within 9 days. So, unlike the two movies that the two of us have done prior to this, this is a film that I brought to you, Mr. Seabrass. So, that being said, you have zero history with the proposition, am I right?
Correct.
And it was here, I'm physically giving you this movie so you can watch it and then just give it back to me so I can watch it.
Old school.
Yeah, it was definitely old school. It wasn't check this out on streaming or whatever. So the reason that I picked this is I watched it probably like 09-ish and really enjoyed it, and I'll get into why. And, you know, there had been some sort of false starts as to people that I was going to have discuss the film with me. And I was like, well, Seabrass and I have done a couple of Westerns already. Shit, we might as well do this Australian Western and just kind of keep the Western thing going. So with that being said, what did you make of it? What did you think of it overall?
It's really well done. I liked it a lot. It's, you know, it's a movie I had never heard of.
Yeah, you know, I find that a lot. I find a lot of people have never, I mean, for the amount of star power that it's had, that has in it, there's not a lot of people that know of it. So I kind of find that to be, I don't know if rewarding is the correct term, but I like that idea that, like, it's a little hidden gem to where I can say, hey, check this out. And most people are like, I don't even know what the fuck that is.
So you're saying you can be snooty about it? You know?
Oh, well. I can definitely be snooty about it. Yeah, so you enjoyed it. What was it that you liked? Just the movie in general, or the plot, or the characters, or what is it that you enjoyed about it?
I thought the acting was really good.
Yeah.
I mean, Guy Pearce, Danny Houston, Ray Winstone, you know, John Hurt, Emily Watson, those are all pretty big names, and they all, I thought, you know, had really good performances. The story is interesting. You know, it's definitely it's a movie that starts off, boom, and, you know, hits you right in the mouth and then just keeps going.
Yeah, you know, that was my first note, actually, was I really appreciate the juxtaposition of you have that very sleepy opening with the old-timey pictures, and you have the Nick Cave score who is kind of, I don't know, he has that one poem that he keeps on, or one lyric that he keeps singing throughout the film. And at the beginning here, it's just kind of real melodic and real kind of slow, paced. And I kind of expected when I first watched this for it to have an opening a little bit like Once Upon a Time in the West, where it gives you a little bit of time to sort of warm up to it. You know, it's just kind of, it sort of wades you into the film. It doesn't just jump you right in there. And so I was kind of expecting that. And instead, right as soon as the title card comes up, then we have the opening opening gunfight and what is, you know, a climax in some other films, you know, or it could potentially be a climax. And so I really kind of liked that, and we didn't get all this fucking around of who these people were and, oh, they were after them and you know, the Burns boys were on the run and they found him and they hold him up and now they're going to take him down, whatever. We didn't have all that horse shit. It just kind of jumped right into it. And I was really struck by that. And you had mentioned the acting before, and I think that one of the things that I really liked about it was the choice to cast Ray Winstone in the role that he is, because he's a guy that I really appreciate. We talked about one of the films that where I really enjoy his performance is Sexy Beast, and we talked about that on an episode of Filmographies not too long ago for a Jonathan Glazer a rundown. But I really like him, and I think that part of what I really like about him in this role in particular is he has this sort of bear like physicality. He's this big burly guy, you know.
Yeah,
not like, you know what I'm talking about. Seabrass. I like the fact that he's this big burly dude because he's obviously a well-fed guy, right? And Emily Watson, like, she's not a rail thin actress, and so I like that because it's kind of like the haves and the have-nots. And so he's a bigger guy, and then when you see the Burns family and you have Guy Pearce, who dropped a lot of weight for this, and, you know, we can get into his actual look in a little bit. I like that they look like they're hungry and desperate, and these people are protective of what they have because they know that they have it better than everyone else. So that's what I'm getting around to. And I'm not talking about him in a homosexual manner in that terminology, Seabrass, which I know is why you're giggling. So that's why I like Ray Winstone. One of the things that you mentioned to me is that you were struck by how quiet the film was, right?
Yes.
What did you mean by that?
Maybe it was just my television, but I just had a hard time. Like, I really had to turn the volume up to hear everybody.
Now, so is it just the dialogue then, or was it the gunfights and that were also quiet?
The dialogue mainly.
Okay, yeah. The dialogue is quiet for me too. And I think that that's a specific choice because I feel like they're so, like, John Hillcoat is so desperately trying to get you into the film. I feel like he's making sure that the actors are not speaking like it's a Broadway play, or they're not talking as if they're aware that they're in a movie. So mm-hmm. they're just speaking quiet and normal, and they're not projecting their voices except for certain parts of the film. And I really like that. Like, I will admit that even though I usually hate on doing this, I did turn the subtitles on, and usually, you know, I mentioned this a couple of times in recent episodes, like again with the Jonathan Glazer discussion when Under the Skin came out this year, Scarlett Johansson plays a character who's not supposed to understand the other people in the film. And if you put the subtitles on in that respect, it sort of lessens the impact because then it makes you understand where you're supposed to be in the same mind frame as she is, and she's not supposed to understand, yada, yada, yada. So normally I don't do the subtitles, but I did in this case because I was trying to, you know, I was trying to figure out what the hell they were saying. And there is such sparse dialogue in parts of the film. I felt like if I didn't do that, I was going to lose, a lot of the movie. So give me a scene or two, Seabrass, or give me something that sticks out in your mind about the film when you think of the proposition.
You know, every scene with John Hurt is pretty interesting.
Oh, you mean both? Yeah, because he's only in two. That's the thing that's crazy is I was like, oh, he's in this a lot. And then when I watched it, when I rewatched it yesterday, I was like, shit, he's only in when he's introduced and he's drunk, and then when he ends up getting killed. And spoilers, obviously, for this discussion. But yeah, he those are good scenes. Like, he's tremendous. You know, we watched him in Snowpiercer for a film or for a discussion that came out long before when this will release, but he was very good in that too. And John Hurt's a guy that I don't know that he necessarily seeks the attention, but I don't think he gets near the attention that he deserves.
Yeah, I would agree on that. He's very underrated.
Yeah. So yeah, what you liked those scenes. What did you like about them?
Yeah, the first scene, I don't know. It was memorable in that the way Guy Pearce and him interacted.
Mm.
And then the second scene, he just used such, you know, raw, hateful language.
Oh yes, yes. He was describing what Irish, what he calls the Irish.
Yeah, and obviously just absolute contempt. And, you know, his death, now that you spoiled it, is memorable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, both of those related deaths or injuries, because what I'm thinking of is when Guy Pearce gets hit with the spear.
Mm-hmm.
And then when John Hurt's character gets shot in the stomach, what I like about them is it's not like what I would consider a typical Western where you get kind of the showdown or the setup or the building of the, you know, the spaghetti Western, the Clint Eastwood, you know, slow build and the camera darting between their eyes. Like, you don't get that here. It feels more real to me because you can hear a gunshot in the distance when John Hurt gets shot in the stomach. And then he's just kind of sitting there and he looks a little different than normal, but then you just start noticing the pool of blood in his stomach that starts seeping through his shirt. And you're like, holy shit. You know, I would just expect in a typical film that there would be a lot more setup there, that there would be some sort of dialogue heavy showdown and, you know, some sort of fisticuffs or whatever. And so I just kind of appreciated how that was, the way that was done and the choices that were done there. What did you make of the flogging sequence?
That was pretty brutal.
Right? Yes.
And the guy, who's the guy that plays the
aristocrat?
Yes.
It's David Wenham, Faramir from the Lord of the Rings movies.
Okay, yeah. He's a great actor, too.
Yeah, boy, he plays a hateable son of a bitch in this movie.
He does that, and he does that well in a lot of movies.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, he's a guy where I couldn't wait for him to get his, and that was one of the things where I was like, ah, damn. You know, as you talk about the end where we don't really get much, resolution for him.
No, he comes out of it fine.
Yeah, which I was really surprised by because I figured he would get something, but then at the same time, nobody knows, like those guys don't know that he was responsible.
And I think that in a lot of ways is life in general. Like, you know, guys like that tend to get away with things.
Mm.
And, you know, Captain Stanley's character, he takes an unusual measure to catch, you know, Arthur Burns. And then he's the one that ends up, and he's just trying to do the right thing, basically. You know, he puts Charlie in a difficult position, but he's still doing that for the greater good. And then he gets punished,
mm-hmm.
you know, immensely for what he did.
Right.
Or couldn't stop.
Sure. What do you think of a movie like this where there's no true white hat to root for?
I like that.
Do you?
Yeah. So many Westerns, it's all, here's your white hat, here's your black hat. You know, I like movies where there are no real good guys.
Mm-hmm.
Where you're not really rooting for anybody.
Yeah, this is certainly that, because at the beginning you're thinking, you don't really necessarily consider Captain Stanley a heroic figure.
No.
And then at the same time, Charlie, who, you know, it's Guy Pearce, he's probably the most recognizable, you wouldn't necessarily think that he's a real stand-up guy either.
No, he's a criminal.
And so, you know, whether he didn't necessarily rape Mrs. Hopkins, but he, you know, must have had something to do with this family's death.
He let it happen, yeah.
Yeah, he was there. That was one of the things that I liked about Danny Houston's character. And I think that he has, for me, he has one of the tougher performances because he's such a, just the bad guy, right? And so.
Yeah, but he doesn't play it like that. I mean, right. It's a character actually with some depth.
Yeah, that's what I like about it is he says, and part of the things that I think is really smart that Nick Cave did in the screenplay was that he wrote lines like, you know, why can't you stop me? To when Arthur's talking to Charlie. And it's things like that where you realize that Arthur knows what he's doing is not okay according to the majority of people. And he knows that it's not okay to Charlie, but he knows that Charlie's powerless to do it. And he's kind of wondering why, you know, like it's a thing where he's like, well, I know you don't like this. So what's your problem? Why can't you, you know, why aren't you doing anything about it? Mm-hmm. And I think that adds a little bit of depth as opposed to him just sitting back there twirling mustaches and, you know, and killing and raping people, that sort of thing. Let's see. Ooh, I do like some of the things that I wanted to mention was I think that it's a film that is very interesting to look at because I think it's really beautiful, but it's also very dirty and very violent and very hellish. And Ray Winston even has a line where he says, "Australia, what fresh hell is this?" And it just looks like no place I would ever want a part of, you know? And I think that you can sometimes get away with that or get away from that in some Westerns to where it's like, oh, okay, look, I realize this is, you know, this little town by a river or by whatever, but it doesn't look necessarily that bad. And I think that, you know, that's one of the things that I appreciate about a TV show that you really enjoy, I think a little bit more than me, but I think that Deadwood does a really good job of that. Of making it seem like, ugh, what a fucking terrible time and place to live. You know, like, how fucking disgusting is this? So, I think that this film does a good job of that, of making the landscape look, you know, like what it's supposed to be, which I don't think is necessarily the easiest thing to do when you're trying to make it look like a, you know, a wasteland almost.
Well, it is the Australian outback, and they're still not a whole lot out there, probably.
That's true. It just makes me not want to visit, I'll tell you that. Like, oh, hell. Don't want this, no. But, so yeah, I think that I really liked that. I think that I really appreciated how the cat, or the crew, I guess, made sure that they went the extra mile in terms of making sure everyone looked fucking disgusting. Like, when you look at Guy Pearce's teeth and John Hurt, and they, you know, IMDb trivia, which is, you know, never wrong, said that they made as many authentic clothing as possible, including buttons and all of those sorts of things, so the people would look as genuine and as authentic as they could. And I think that in a lot of films, if they're just kind of bullshit westerns, they would kind of sort of dirty them up a little bit. But this feels like they've been out there forever. I mean, it feels like Guy Pearce's character, you know, hasn't bathed in years. You know, he just looks horrible. And I think that for me is another thing that really puts me into the world that they sort of created here.
Well, it is an entire, mostly British cast, so.
Our apologies to all British listeners. Yeah, that's so you're saying they didn't have to stretch, is what you're telling me.
Maybe in the dental work, not so much.
Holy shit. So I mentioned the flogging earlier to you, and I put that, oh, I forgot how much of a rough watch that is. And I think that a lot of it, it's not the actual whipping, because you've seen whipping whether you're watching The Passion of the Christ, right? Or whether you're watching a movie about slavery, like you've seen whipping in films before, flogging in films before. But I think that one of the things that really makes me sort of squirm while I'm watching it is Mike's reaction. And it's not the tough, proud man that's taking his beating and sort of, you know, taking his medicine, so to speak. He's just flailing and screaming and crying and pleading and doing everything that he can to make sure that the audience knows that this is a fucking, you know, beatdown. And I think that, you know, there are a couple of things that really struck me about that, pardon the pun, is that I think the first thing is the way that he's screaming, and the second one is when they sort of wring the blood off of the whip. That was one of the things where I was like, oh my God, like, ugh. And so I know that that's a tough sit. And then there, of course, is the, when he whips and gets the blood splatter everywhere, and Emily Watson's character passes out and all that sort of thing. And of course the, you know, it seems like it's been going on forever. And then they say 38 and he's got 100 coming. And I'm just like, oh my good Lord. You know, that's one of the things that, is tough to remember about how things used to be. So, let's see. What else do I have here, Mr. Seabrass? This is a little bit further, on in the film, and it's when Charlie has been rescued and the John Hurt killing has happened, and they go back to the town, and they go into, they're pretending to be police, they're pretending to be the sheriff, and they go into the jail, and they free Mike, and they go ahead and just decapitate and gut or Lord knows what to the police officers. And what did you think of that, Seabrass?
I thought that was retribution for what they had done to
Mikey. Sure. But what did you think of it? Was it just a thing where you're like, oh, okay, yeah, this is just standard stuff, or what did you think about it?
It was a pretty brutal scene. Mm-hmm. You know, it definitely is something that's like, wow, they're not really pulling any punches here.
They're not fucking around.
But I mean, I think you had that scene set up, that scene at least for me reinforced the Arthur Burns is a sociopath.
Mm.
Basically, sure. You don't see the first killing. You don't see any of that. So it's in your mind that this guy is a dangerous dude, and then you don't really see how dangerous he is until that scene.
Yeah.
And he shows you just how dangerous he is.
Yeah, you know what I liked about it and what I wrote down was that I kind of liked that David Wenham's character, he is thinking that he's kind of, you know, pulling out all the stops and really going there by whipping, by flogging Mikey. And it's kind of like he's going to throw his weight around and do sort of what Ray Winstone's character is trying to do, where he's going to civilize this land, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's a little bit like that. And I think that when you have the decapitations and then the hands are removed, and I love that he goes in there and his reaction, I put the reaction of that posh fucker because I couldn't remember his name at the time.
Eaton Fletcher.
Yeah, I put that. I think that I love that because he thinks that he knows what men are capable of, and so he thinks he's crossing the line with this flogging. And then he goes in there, and it's sort of as like an eye opener as to what he's really involved with, or what this group is really like. And I think that you know, it's like as close as he gets to, you know, getting his in a way, because it's like, well, you know, you don't have a handle on this like you think that you do. And I think that I really appreciate that. And, you know, I mean, obviously glad that they didn't show much of that, but I think it's almost as tough for me to watch when the youngest, it's not the youngest, but it's like the little buddy. What the hell is that kid's name? It's, the guy that's with Arthur the whole time, and they have the guy that he calls the black bastard.
Samuel Stoat?
Yeah. Stoat. It's when he, is trying to rinse off all the blood. and he pours the bucket on his head, and he's got just blood everywhere, and he's putting on a new shirt, and it's just, he's just filled with blood and obviously other people's blood. And so it was after he tried to wash himself and he was still sort of covered with it, where that I was like, oh my goodness. Like, that was something that I really was, I really took note of, because it was just so much. And at the time, you don't see, like, you don't see the heads and you don't see the hands and you don't see what exactly has been done, but you can imagine that something fucking grisly has gone on. And then when David Wenham goes in there and you see some of the bodies sitting there, you're like, holy shit, that's no good. So the sequence we're getting at to now, Seabrass, is the Christmas dinner, our climax of the film. Christmas dinner and the sort of very quiet scene where they're getting ready to carve the turkey, and the Burns boys comes in, and we have this Christmas dinner and then potential rape sequence, or almost rape sequence. And what is it that you thought about that in particular, about the climax of our film?
You know, the Ray Winstone knows they're coming, basically. And they still have this, you know, traditional Christmas dinner, and they're, you know, sitting down, and he knows that they, you know, he's boarded up the house and done everything, but he still knows they're coming, and he knows there really isn't a whole lot he can do to stop them, apparently.
Mm-hmm.
And he, you know, trying to enjoy this, for me, it feels like probably, you know, the last meal he's going to have there.
Yeah, at least he's prepared for it in case it is.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a sequence that's tough, because it's almost like he has not necessarily given up or given, you know, he's not necessarily just laying down, but, you know, because you don't see the sort of fight that goes on in the room between Charlie and, or between, Arthur and him, but it is, you know, like you said, it is reminiscent of a, well, let's just have this one last nice meal together. But I'm glad that they don't say anything like that. You know, you don't have to have the dialogue there that says, well, you know, and he wouldn't say anything like that to his wife anyway, because he's trying to protect her from everything.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that's the thing, as the film goes on, that I was really struck by, is that he is trying to do what's best for her. Like, he is trying to keep her out of harm's way, and he is trying to not involve her in things. And she is not okay with that in some respects. You know, her friend is Mrs. Hopkins, who was raped while she was pregnant. And, you know, she has those dreams, and she, which is a really nice sequence where she's in the bath and she's describing the dream that she has of Mrs. Hopkins' baby. And, you know, I think that that's really well shot, and I think that that's really well executed. And you see, Captain Stanley in the background crying, because he's, you know, he not only does he feel bad for the situation, but he also realizes that that's not something that's probably going to happen. Like, they're not going to be there long enough to have a child of their own.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that's something that's interesting. But he, you know, at this moment is just trying to have his nice dinner, and, you know, he is doing what he did what he could, and was sort of, you know, with the flogging and with the eventual retribution that he knows is coming, you know, just trying to eke out a couple of nice moments before the end. And so I think that they do a really good job of, you know, making him look like he got his fucking ass kicked. And that's something that Ray Winstone seems to do a lot of. It's like, I feel like every movie I see him in, he's got a sequence where he's all bloodied and beaten up and you know, very desperate looking. And I think that that's something that he does particularly well. And I think that he looks really well, or looks really good in that sort of, you know, like I mentioned earlier, he's a big burly guy. And so to see him sort of grounded to the level that he's at the end of this film, I think that that's pretty interesting. What did you think of the end of our, you know, of our spoiler of our end here with Charlie coming back, did you think that that was something that was fairly typical? Were you surprised by it? Did you think that she was going to be raped or killed, or did you think it was going to end in more of a traditional way, or what did you think of that?
I thought, you know, that ending, you knew that Charlie was going to come back and do something.
Yeah, after Mike dies, right, you figured he's going to do something.
But I liked that, I liked the way they did it.
Mm.
Where he didn't just kill his brother.
Yeah.
You know, they had that last moment together, which they'd had a similar moment earlier in the movie.
Yeah, in Danny Houston's introduction.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because he has his back turned to him at that moment, and he has the opportunity to shoot him.
Mm-hmm.
But he doesn't, and that's also the moment that I referenced earlier with the you know, why won't you stop me comment.
And I liked that Arthur didn't do anything after he'd been shot. He didn't do anything. He didn't try and shoot his younger brother.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he didn't try and, you know, he's like, oh, you know, you should not in the gut, you know, not in the gut.
Yeah, he was kind of like, oh, I'm not in the gut. You fucker. It's kind of like that, you know, like, not in the gut, Charlie.
But yeah. Not quite like that. And then, you know, he just, they have their last little moment and he dies. And, you know, I thought that was well done.
Yeah, yeah. He does the, you know, it makes me wonder, you know, what is it about Mikey finally dying that allows him to be okay with killing Arthur finally?
I think he puts it on Arthur.
Like it's his fault. If he wouldn't have got him in this position, Mikey wouldn't have been dead.
Yeah, like, you know, what happened. And I think he probably takes some blame too, because he didn't kill Arthur sooner. Mm. But yeah, I think he puts most of that blame on, at least that was my interpretation, that he blames Arthur for Mikey's death.
Yeah.
Or pretty, at least fair. Putting Mikey in that situation. And, you know, I think that's why he shoots him the way he shoots him.
Sure. Oh, yeah. He definitely doesn't want to shoot him in the head. And because I think that's what I like about the rapist, the little squirrely fucker, is that he just walks up to him and shoots him.
Yeah.
You know, there's no consideration for him. There's no last sequence and you know, like dying on the sunset and all that for him. There's just shooting him, he's dead. Move on. And so, yeah, I really like that last scene where he does shoot him, but I don't know if they walk out there together or if he helps him walk out there. I would assume they would have to. You know, because they're out, they're in the house when he gets shot, when Arthur gets shot. But then the last sequence is they're out, not really on a cliff, but they're out kind of in, you know, a little ways from the house. So they walk out there, presumably so Arthur can look at nature for the last time. And nature's the thing that he's said several times in the film about how it, you know, eases the soul and about how he's, you know, such a fan of it. And so I thought that was kind of a nice little unseen bit there that yes, Charlie's killing him, but he is allowing him this one last thing, really. And he's sitting with his brother. You know, and I think that was good. I like how he says, you know, you got me, Charlie. What are you going to do now? And that's how the film ends with Arthur dying. And I think I really like the way that ends, because really there, you would like to think, well, Charlie can do whatever he wants. Well, he's still part of this group, right? He's still probably going to get hunted down. He's still going to have, you know, police and whatever after him. I would imagine, because it's not like the people being killed in the jail are just going to go, are just going to let that go. And it's not like, you know, he's a Burns brother. So it's not like he could just say, oh no, it was the guys that are dead. They did everything. I'm innocent.
He's the one armed man.
Yeah. Well, I guess he could say that, you know, Arthur's dead and Ray Winstone's character has, said that I would get a pardon if he was dead. So he gets a pardon maybe. And he's able to do whatever he wants. But I do like films that are a little bit open ending like that. So you get to think just a little bit about what they could do after that.
Yeah.
After it closes. So yeah, so that's that's the majority of the plot of the proposition. Have you how familiar are you with Mr. Hillcoat, who's directed this? Have you seen The Road or Lawless? His other two films, Mr. Seabrass.
I have not.
You haven't seen The Road with old Vigo?
Nope.
No, oh, it's a Cormac McCarthy book, and it's kind of end of the world. So it's a little bit of the same sort of landscape as The Proposition. and then Lawless is a Tom Hardy, Shia LaBeouf Western.
Shia LaBeouf's in a Western?
Well, it's sort of Western-y. I mean, it's not really Western, I guess. It's more like Depression era. But it's still not like, it's not like a modern day. So it's a of its time. But I really like that as well. And that's also written by Nick Cave. So it's the same group. And it has, it's Shia LaBeouf, Tom Hardy, Jason Clarke, Guy Pearce again, Jessica Chastain, Mia Wasikowska, and Gary Oldman are the people that are in that. And I really enjoyed that. I know that I feel like I'm sort of in the minority. I think a lot of people didn't really care for it, but I thought that was pretty good. So that may be one that you should check out as well, Mr. Seabrass.
I'm looking at John Hillcoat right now. His highest rated movie on Rotten Tomatoes is The Proposition.
That's right.
Lowest is Lawless, but that's still 67%.
Yeah, he's only made three. I don't know if major is the right word. I think probably The Road was his first introduction to a lot of audiences, and that was 2009. And then he's made Lawless, and then now he's in post production on a movie called Triple Nine that comes out next year. But he's only made he made Ghosts of the Civil Dead, which is his first real film, and that was in 1988. To Have and to Hold, which I don't know anything about that, and then Proposition, The Road, Lawless, and Triple Nine. So yeah, he doesn't do a ton of films, and he's an Australian director, and obviously works quite a bit with Nick Cave, I feel like does a little bit of everything, whether he's acting or, Nick Cave and the Bad Seeds or writing or what have you. He does a lot of shit, so. But he's so that's quite a group. I think that I'll probably end up seeing Triple Nine. I don't know if that's a theater trip for me or not, because it comes out in about 9 months as of recording. So we'll kind of have to see. Well, do you have anything else about The Proposition before we close this out, Seabrass?
No, I'm glad you recommended it to me there, Snooty.
There it is. Glad I recommended it. That's what I do the show for, Seabrass. The pats on the back.
Now, obviously, you had three or four other people lined up to do it, and they wouldn't do it. So I was like a forced guy.
Yeah, it was, look, I just need someone to be on the other end while I talk about how I like this movie a lot. Are you willing to watch this and then just listen to me talk about why I like it?
And have a beer.
That's right. License to have a beer and take a break from building furniture. So there you go. Well, if you have any comments, suggestions, or movies that you'd like to hear us talk about specifically for Podshots, you can email us at plainlabelpodcast@gmail.com. You can follow the show under the handle @plainlabelpod over at Twitter, where you can follow me. I'm @EricWilliams79. We also have a Facebook page where you could like the show. Just search for Plain Label Podcast. If you wanted to help us out a little bit, you could head over to Amazon.com and you could search for our wish list. It's full of the movies that we want, equipment that we need, and a whole host of other goodies. If you're in the giving mood, just search for the wish list called Plain Label Podcast. So I want to thank Mr. Seabrass again for coming on and discussing The Proposition. People wanted to hear more from him, they could check out our previous discussions on Unforgiven and Once Upon a Time in the West, as well as checking out our podcast that we do called Fumble Rooski, which is a podcast on the Nebraska Cornhuskers and their football seasons. But if people wanted to hear more from you specifically or get in contact with you, where could they do so?
Seabass18 on Twitter.
Over at the Twitters. Or they could see your fine work at the Daily Herald.
Yeah, barely.
It's like the offensive lineman. If they notice you, that's not good, right?
Yep. That means I messed something up.
There you go. Well, thank you for listening. We'll be back in 2 weeks with another co-host and another film.
said the moon to the stars in the sky. Soon said the wind that followed him home. Hope said the cloud that started to cry. Me said the rider as dry as a bone. Who said the sun that melted the ground? Why said the river that refused to run? Where said the thunder without a sound? Here said the rider and took up his gun. Said the stars to the moon in the sky. No, said the trees that started to moan. No, said the dust that blinded his eyes. Yes, said the rider as white as a bone. No, said the moon that rose from his sleep. No, said the cry of the dying sun. No, said the planets that started to weep. Yes, said the rider and laid down his gun.